right, welcome back. It's your favorite new radio show, The Kaufman Show. We're here a little early this week. It's the special Passover edition. I will be leading the Seder. I'm with Eliyahu himself. Actually, he showed up tonight, Mr. Jay Farrar.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Happy Passover, bud.
You too.
Thanks. You okay? Nice job saying that.
I don't know what you're supposed to say on Passover. Happy Passover.
I think I just set it out there for
okay.
you. Just follow my lead, man.
All right.
Bob's your uncle.
Tom's my uncle.
Tom's your uncle. Yeah. I guess. And speaking of, please wish your Uncle Tom a happy Greek Independence Day.
I will.
Thank you.
Because he cares.
He does.
Yeah.
So we're back, and we've got a jam-packed show for you guys tonight. On a little bit earlier, very excited about it. Hopefully you are listening live on TSN 690. If not, you're on the podcast at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. If you want to reach us tonight, Jay is on Twitter. He is at JPub Radio. I am at The Kaufman Show. The lovely and talented Robin Flynn is sitting in the director's chair right now. Hello, Robin.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to The Kaufman Show.
Thank you for welcoming me. I think this is my first time
absolutely.
Doing this show.
Absolutely. This is our first rodeo.
It is.
I'm looking forward to it.
I've known Robin for quite a while. We've never been on the air together.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. This should be fun.
It's nice to have a girl in here, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Instead of, like, smelly guys. You know, just a bunch of smelly Greek guys and one Jew.
Jimmy just jumped in the shower in advance of showing up at 11.
That has never happened, my friend.
I even put on deodorant and I put on perfume and stuff.
Well,
so
it is.
Kicked it up a notch.
It is a Seder. I mean, you have to, you know, get a little for pits.
You're a girl. You don't even need to put on perfume. We're just happy to have you here. Doesn't matter. Just show up.
John Kakalakis is here as well. He also took Greek Independence Day off. Is there a term for it? Like, how we have the 4th of July or Canada Day? Is it Greek Day or?
It's Greek Independence Day.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
It's half of me.
Happy Greek Independence Day, half of
Thank
Jay
you.
Farrar.
Thank you very much.
The other half had St. Patrick's Day last week.
Yes, to all my Greek friends, all my boys I grew up in Chamonix with, happy Greek Independence Day. Luckily, we're still independent. And that's good.
That's right. None of those Cyprus.
And to my Jewish friends in Chamonix, happy Passover.
That's right. Are there any Greek Jewish friends, or did the twain never meet?
I know one Greek Jew. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a mighty fine Greek Jew he is.
Yes. Opened a restaurant with really nice clothes in it. I don't know.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Nice uniforms.
Jay, like I said, we've got a big show tonight. We've got a bunch of great guests.
Yes.
Starting in about 20 minutes' time, we'll be joined by Dan Gradinsky, who is normally the Kaufman Show legal analyst from the firm of Borden, Ladner, Gervais. He's going to talk to us about the death race, because, you know, that's what lawyers do in their spare time.
Okay.
If you haven't heard of the death race, check out youmaydie.com.
Yes.
And we'll run through that. And they just
Is
had
he
their,
doing that again?
They just had their winter death race a few
oh,
weeks back.
Oh, they have
back.
A winter one now.
They do, of course, because, you know, the summertime isn't enough. You have to run through frozen Vermont lakes
right.
as well.
Right. You should at least try to kill yourself twice a year.
At least.
Yeah.
But Dan has decided to up the ante a little bit. And this summer, he's right now training for a 250-mile marathon in the Gobi Desert.
Okay. Because we need to up the ante.
I kid you not. In about an hour's time, we will be joined by Major League Baseball pitcher Jim Abbott. It. One of my favorite baseball players when I was a kid, just a wonderful story. Jim overcame all the odds, had one hand, and made it to the major leagues. He was a top 10 draft choice by the California Angels, skipped the minor leagues, made the jump straight to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, Jay, he pitched a no-hitter for the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium. So we're going to talk to Jim, catch up with him, see what he's up to
now.
Did
you ever try to emulate him when you were a kid?
Of course, who didn't?
Yeah. Try to get the glove flip and then try and get it back on.
I was thinking about that today. And
yeah.
I mean,
I tried it time and time again. Impossible. It was amazing.
He had a wonderful fielding percentage. He was one of the best defensive pitchers there was.
Yeah.
It was, I'm really excited to catch up with him. I think it'll be a fantastic.
We can ask him about that.
And
so many people,
Jay, don't know the story of Jim Abbott. It's, you know, not everybody that listens to our show has been watching baseball for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to telling that story. It's a great great story about overcoming the odds and succeeding in becoming a champion. We're also going to speak with another champion, Nancy Hogshead Makar, who is a little bit before my time, but won 3 gold medals in swimming at the 1984 Summer Olympics. She's also the Director of Advocacy for the Women's Sports Foundation. So we're going to talk about Steubenville. We're going to maybe ask her about her opinion about the state of Canadian women's hockey. and how we can get that to a level that's a little bit more respectable.
It's great we have a woman in the studio for
absolutely.
It as well.
And, well, if she wants to stick around, she's more than welcome to, but I think Jimmy will be here by that point.
Oh, really?
Oh, Jay.
I like Robin so
much
better.
You're showing all the cards, man.
Yeah.
I've been here since 7.
7?
7, and I was here this morning.
You worked for 3 hours.
And I worked 5 this morning.
Oh, okay, fine.
Are we okay, kid? We're all right, guys?
Settle
fine.
Down.
All right. Robin, you're more than welcome to join us anytime, and we'll very much enjoy and appreciate
I'm pretty sure Robin's going home.
The hour that we have with you. We will cherish it.
Wonderful.
Jay, last Tuesday, was it last Tuesday or last Wednesday? I got to go to the Montreal Baseball Project's press conference.
Yes, you did.
You slept in.
Yes, I did.
I asked you to come.
Yes, you did.
But I didn't need a bodyguard. I didn't need anybody to hold my hand.
Is that what you needed me
of
for?
Of course, yeah.
Because neither of things would have happened. You know that,
really?
Right? I might have held.
But you
won't
hold my hand in public anymore?
Not anymore.
Not cool, Ferrari.
No.
Not cool.
No.
If you've read the news this week, it's been one of the biggest stories in town that the Montreal Board of Trade and some anonymous Montreal business people are kicking in $200,000 each for a feasibility study to see if baseball could work in this town.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Jay?
What do I think about what?
What do you think about the feasibility study?
Great. Why not? What's wrong with that? It's a study, and we need a study. And if there's a study and people are willing to pay money for it, that means there are some interested people. And interested people, well, that's a start.
There have been some complaints about that this money may be better spent elsewhere.
Okay, on what?
That the Board of Trade should be looking at a city like Montreal that is rife with corruption, where the roads are third world. Mm-hmm. That maybe there'd be a better spot to spend the 200 grand.
Mm-hmm.
There have been discussions about you can pay somebody to tell you, I'll pay you $500,000. Now tell me what to think.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are they're going to say what we want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need somebody to tell us that baseball is feasible in this town, or do we not know it already? Do we not know what the obstacles are already?
It doesn't matter what we know. You know, they want to hear from the so-called experts.
So this is for MLB then?
Who knows? I mean, but you need to get people who are professional and know how to do this thing, put a report together, and then submit it to Major League Baseball and also the local corporations.
We need an owner and we need a stadium.
Yes.
Feasibility study be damned with an owner and a stadium.
Owner's not going to buy a stadium without a feasibility report.
Okay, so you think that this has to happen in order for somebody to show up and make this happen?
You got to go through the proper lines. There's got to be red tape. There's got to be red tape. They're not going to just go around house to house and say, hey, you guys want baseball? You want baseball? You want baseball? You and I can do that. We can take a poll on the radio, and of course everybody's going to call in.
Well, it's a sports radio station. I think our data would be a little bit skewed.
That's exactly right. So you need the people who have the means of gathering the proper data.
Which is Léger and Léger Marketing, which is the biggest name in the province.
Which I have no problem with.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Look, I'm excited. I'm trying to remain cautious in my excitement. I have an idea for where I think the stadium should be. I don't think it's a bad idea either. I'll share it with all of you right now. I think that the stadium should be on the spot where Cabot Square and the Montreal Children's Hospital lies, just south of the Montreal Forum. Children's is moving to the MUHC in 2015. That spot will be vacant as far as I know. I don't think it's been sold yet or what they've decided what they're going to do with it. To me, that seems like the perfect spot. It would revitalize Shaughnessy Village, an area that is seen better days, let's just put it that way. And it would keep it in the city. There would be a metro station leading into it. That's my 2 cents.
Two birds. No, I mean, you bring back baseball, you bring back a viable attraction to tourists, revitalizing a part of town which has gone to absolute crap, and that way you can kill two birds with one stone. Very simple.
And again, I know that this is
and if
a long...
you're worried about where the money is going, well, there you go. This city can have millions and billions and millions of dollars. Those roads will never get fixed. Just forget about it. No, it's not. It's true. It's a fact. We're not a poor city. We have money. Those roads will never get fixed. It's the environment. It's our environment.
No, that's an excuse. That's not true.
No, it's true.
That's not true. You cross the highway into Ontario, Jay, and the roads change.
Well, then there's idiots running it. And there always will be idiots around.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So forget
idiots
about
are running it. We know that. We've been watching the Charbonneau Commission.
Good. Maybe if they get more tourists coming in for baseball and then get embarrassed because everybody comes up here and goes back to the States and says, wow, are their roads in crappy condition?
Oh, that's a bit of a reach, my friend.
Well, maybe then it'll push somebody, but that's in the future. And we don't care about that. We don't care about that.
So
you want the money now. The money is there now. Get baseball in town. People will start coming up. People start paying for it, advertising, more companies maybe will move in, and then you'll have your money for your roads.
So, like I said, patience, right?
Patience.
Slowly, slowly.
Slowly but surely.
From your lips, man.
Yeah.
It's been an exciting
week.
I'm saying it. It's been a very exciting week. And, you know, there has been precedence. There was baseball played in that area before. Mm-hmm. Where Alexis Neon Mall is now mm-hmm. was the site of the first ever baseball stadium in Montreal. Montreal was part of the Eastern League back then. It was at the turn of the century. Babe Ruth played here.
Yes.
At Atwater Stadium.
Les Canadiens.
Exactly.
Les Canadiens
de Montréal. And then the Royals.
Yes.
Who also played there as well until, I think, the mid or late 20s.
Yes.
When they realized that perhaps they would get more fans and draw more of an attraction playing in the industrial part of town.
Right.
So they built the Laurier Stadium.
Yes.
And I find that that's quite interesting.
Yes.
And now, what, maybe that's not the right part of town anymore?
It's certainly not the right part of town.
Well, it depends on how much you want to charge for tickets.
Well, they're going to charge a lot for tickets because we have to pay for the roads.
And we have gone full circle.
See? Right back to where we began.
And the song is perfect. Turn this up. It's Broken Road by Paul Langlois on The Kaufman Show. Dan Gradinsky is here. He's dressed up. He's wearing a tie.
That's how he does his death race, by the way. That's the kind of guy he is. So easy to him. He does it in a suit and tie.
Well, it's at least how he does his Seder, or at least maybe his days at Borden Ladner Gervais.
Right.
But, yeah, we'll bring him on a little early, talk a little death race. This will be a fun night on The Kaufman Show.
Deserano was a friend of mine. Too much double talk and too much time. Guess if I was looking, I would find it's a broken road. And it's too long. Yeah.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Coming at you a little early tonight. And we're trying not to eat the matzah on air. I just feel like that wouldn't be cool. Don't want to make everybody jealous.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had some matzah right now.
Said no one ever.
Ever.
514-790-1690. If you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. Dan Gradinsky is right around the corner. First, we're going to go to Jerry, and NDG wants to talk. He wants to talk hockey. In this town, at this time of year, on Passover, Jerry, what gives?
Happy Pesach.
Happy Pesach. How are you, Jerry?
All right. My first couple of suggestions, and then I have a baseball comment.
Sure.
I think we should give the Penguins and the Bruins some of the bread of affliction, should we say?
That doesn't sound very nice.
Why not? Then we have a good chance of winning. I could think of a few players like Lucic and, you know.
I think the Habs have a puncher's chance.
What's
without
the bread
any
of
sort of. I'm not sure, but it's some sort of. Sounds like some sort of religious hoodoo voodoo.
In Greek, it's called the mati, where you give them the curse of the eye.
I thought it was the kavorka.
And then you have to mix like egg whites and whatever together, and then it's cured. Some lemon, and then you do a chant, and then it goes away.
Curses the Cubs, right?
According to everybody born before 1950.
By the way, here's a baseball comment.
Yes.
You know I lived in the U.S., right?
Yes, in Washington,
and
if I recall.
And we used to go to, before the Nationals came there, we used to go to games at Baltimore.
Sure.
And they used to have Memorial Stadium.
That's right.
Nobody went there. It was like in the middle, it was down at the lousy area of town, and the football team played there, the baseball team played there, nobody went there.
Yeah, and...
And they built Camden Yards.
Right.
Which is on right near the highway, which takes you to Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful ballpark. And last year,
Virginia, Maryland, and Baltimore all went.
Yeah, but last year, Jerry, when the Baltimore Orioles were one of the best teams in baseball, And on any average day when they weren't playing the Red Sox or Yankees, you'd see 13, 14,000. Baseball attendance seems to be a very cyclical thing. And unfortunately, this is not something that people in the United States understood when the Expos were dying. But, you know, you go back 20 years, 25 years, and Yankee Stadium wasn't full. And I remember being a kid, and the Dale Murphy Braves would get 3,000, 4,000 at
the launching pad.
That's what they were. Who else was on that team? Dibby McDowell.
Jim Horner.
I don't remember Jim Horner.
Hit four home runs in
a game. Jerry, anything else?
Yeah, the reason the Orioles dropped in attendance is that a lot of people who now go to the Nationals used to go to Baltimore.
Well, I think Major League Baseball knew that going in, and I know that Peter Angelos has a very favorable television deal that helps combat whatever financial ills they have attendance-wise. But this is a first-place ball club, and there are how many people? 5-6 million people in that D.C., in the Beltway, they call it? Seems like they should be able to pack Camden Yards.
Got Virginia as well, and that goes all the way up to Pennsylvania. So they're okay.
Thanks for the call, Jerry. Happy Passover. And there he goes.
No bread of affliction.
No
please.
Bread of affliction. Not on this show, man.
Bread of affliction.
Can we Google that?
With the bread.
It sounds very sketchy.
The bread of affliction.
Robin's looking on it right now. Thank you, Robin. Let's bring in Kaufman Show legal analyst who is not wearing his legal pants today, his legal briefs today. Although you're really kind of, you're dressed for the part, Dan Gradinsky.
Well, Dave, I do what I can. I got to be flexible, you know, so... You do what you can to wear the suit, to wear the tie almost every single day.
Did you have a nice Passover dinner?
I did. It was beautiful. I ate really well. Thank you very much. My Aunt Marla, she did a great job.
There was no bread of affliction at that dinner, my friend.
I think actually there was. My guess is it,
oh, God.
Bread of affliction, isn't that matzah?
Bread of affliction?
I'm going to say that's what it is.
So Jerry was saying, Robin, do we have, yes?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Look at that.
I just looked it up. Bread
sound effects and everything.
Is matzah.
So Jerry from Snowden was suggesting that we give Pittsburgh and Boston matzah, and that will make the Habs better.
Well, wait a second here.
He must be a raging anti-Semite. That's the only thing I can figure.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
Nothing else. It'll make them retain water?
Yeah, maybe. It'll dehydrate them, maybe.
I don't know. I think we're all reading too much into this.
Yeah.
Montreal Canadiens are in second place. I don't think we need to unleaven anybody else's bread, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Before we run away with this, Dave.
Yeah, it's already gone, man.
Every other time that I've either called into a radio show and got a trivia question right, I've gotten a prize of some sort. I actually came into the station and answered the question. Now, where does that leave me here?
When I finish my Tim Hortons coffee, you can roll up the rim, and if it wins, you can have the prize, okay?
You sure you want to say that?
What, you think it's going to be the car?
Yeah. Well, imagine it is. How you feel now?
Then
that was on the air, by the way.
I know. Okay. This is for the ages.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to finish the coffee before the segment is over so that, you know.
Take a peek at it first.
Yeah, the listeners can get the real experience.
Right.
And if, I swear to God, Gradinsky, if you pretend that you won the car when you didn't, the radio gods will come after you.
You know, and I'll let you borrow it on weekends, David.
How about I borrow it when you go off to the Gobi Desert this summer?
That's coming up very shortly.
All right. Now, before we talk about the past, I want to talk about the future. Dan has been on the show a couple of times. The last time was to talk about the Pittsfield, Vermont death race. Their website is youmaydie.com. He did that last summer, and we spoke with him about it. He has since done the winter one. All of this in preparation for the big event this summer, which is a 250-mile marathon.
A 250-kilometer marathon, yeah.
Pardon me. 250-kilometer marathon. In the Gobi Desert.
That's right. I'm going to be running something called the Gobi March, which is, you might have been there before. It's on the Chinese-Kazakhstani border.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
That's where I summer.
Well, that's where I'll be at least this summer. So so the idea is that, it's a self-supported ultramarathon, which means that I carry every last little bit of equipment and all the food that I'm going to need. And it's going to weigh a total of about 25, 30 pounds or so. Okay.
So a lot of bread of affliction.
I would imagine.
That you're going to need.
Yeah, I'm going to be taking a whole bunch of that. Don't worry. Yeah. If not, I'll be making some along the way. I think that'll probably be appropriate.
That's right. You're going to be wandering the desert for very, very good.
If it's not the promised land, well, you know, hopefully I'll be able to find some sort of moment of clarity.
It's somebody's promised land. So this is what compels one to do this?
Well, it's for me, it's been step by step. You know, I started running shorter races and then getting a little bit longer each time. And then finally, as soon as I saw something that says, well, you know, I can run across the Gobi Desert, it sounded so extreme and so out there that I couldn't say no to the possibility.
Wow, I could have so easily said no.
No kidding.
No, but it just, and again, we're going to, after the break, Robin's coming up with an update in a couple of minutes, but we'll get into the death race and exactly what kind of a crazy person wants to undertake something like this and tax their body and tax their brain.
I'm sitting right here, Dave.
Yeah, he's right there.
Sorry.
There he is.
I forgot.
Here's your prime example.
Play along for a second.
Right
here,
over there.
Dan. But this, just going to the middle of nowhere, at least you know that this in Vermont, if something happens, you're at a hospital in an hour. This is on the China-Mongolia border.
China-Kazakhstani.
Kazakhstani, sorry.
It's only about, I think the toughest part might be getting there. It was about 2 hours and about maybe 4 or 5 Chinese layovers to actually get to this final spot. So,
is that more than an American layover?
Have you been to any Kazakhstani hospitals lately?
Not yet.
Why would you? Because there are none. There are no Kazakhstani hospitals.
I'm hoping that this isn't, I mean, I'm looking forward to when you return, but I'm wondering if the Kazakhstan of Borat is going to ring true.
I hope so. I mean, that's sort of, you know,
that's what he's going there for.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to wear one of those swimsuits. Do the race in that.
Oh, wow. Are you going to stick around and talk about this and the death race a little bit more?
Yeah, I've got all the details. Be happy to tell you.
Wonderful. Dan Gradinsky joins us in studio. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Robin Flynn. It's the Kaufman Show. Stick around.
No way I'm picking up my phone. I'm tired of talking, leave me alone. I can't run and I can't write, and I can't make it home tonight. No, no. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Sometimes you can feel a sense of confinement that is so crushing. But it actually starts to feel good. Each time a member of your family probably rescues you. So you think they did.
We're back. It's The Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. You can reach me at The Kaufman Show on Twitter. My lovely, talented co-host, Mr. Jay Farrar, at J-Pub Radio.
Lovely.
You are.
I'm lovely.
Robin Flynn.
Yes.
Also lovely.
She agrees.
What a beautiful tattoo, I will say.
You've never noticed the tattoo before?
I've never noticed it, and I'll tell you, Robin, you're going to turn that down right now. Right now. Turn it down now. Right now, there we go, and then we're going to turn right back up. Here we go, here we go, there we go, and we're good. Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Robin has the most beautiful Montreal Canadiens tattoo on her forearm that probably gets her, well, probably doesn't get her very many drinks in Boston.
No, and it hasn't really got me many drinks here either, to be honest. People just look at me like I'm nuts. They're
You're kidding me.
Really? Really?
Wow. Well, hopefully you did not get that vibe from me, right?
Yeah, who's this coming from? People with barbed wire tattoos on their arms that'll look ridiculous when they're 74 years old?
Or a dolphin on their ankle.
Yeah, a dolphin,
A happy little dolphin.
My sister has a Winnie the Pooh
Really?
Yeah, on right on her waist.
It's Thalia,
what a colossal,
right?
Yeah, Thalia.
Thalia. Happy Greek Independence Day, Thalia.
Yeah, it's always good to get on her good side, believe me.
Hey, man, I'm not making fun of her tattoo.
Hell hath no fury like a Greek woman score.
Or a woman, period.
Or your
regardless
sister,
regardless of nationality.
Matter. Yeah, well, you never want to piss off the sisters of this world.
No, you don't.
That's one thing I've learned.
Especially not mine.
Having a younger sister, I want to stay on her good side. We are still joined in studio by Dan Gradinsky.
Oh, is he still here?
He is.
He's like, I'm getting out of here.
I would have thought he would have left the way we were talking about him before. Yeah. I think I called him, was the word crazy? I don't know why I'd do that. That's just not a nice thing to do, to call a guest, somebody who takes time out on Passover to come join us in studio.
That still stings, Dave.
I know.
Tell you.
I know, and I apologize. And for that, we're going to plug the heck out of the Death Race starting in a couple of minutes. First, I want to tell you about an event that you need to join us at next Tuesday, April 2nd at Hurley's Irish Pub, which is on Crescent Street. It's 1225 Crescent Street, scene of our most famous crime, the Gary Carter event last year. A wonderful night. And I have a feeling that this Tuesday is going to recreate some of that magic. Really looking forward to it. It's a Save TSN 690 night. Save TSN 690 Palooza.
Okay.
I'm trying to come up with a
rally.
Save TSN 690 Chiaga.
A TSN Naru.
Yes.
Yeah.
Le mot juste, Monsieur Farrar. Le mot juste. Solstice, the Choir Boys, Shane Murphy, Rob Lutz, Rob McDonald, the Jimmy Riggers, and more. This is from the Jimmy Riggers. They just sent out a Facebook message. It's this. If you want to find it on Facebook, it's called A Show of Support for TSN 690. Show in quotations. It's a show of support.
Ah,
why do clever. Why do we need to have this night? Why is this night different from all others? Manish Tanahalil Hazeh. Well, because TSN 690 is once again facing the regulatory axe. Its owners, Emerged Astral and Bell Media, need to be granted an exemption from the CRTC to allow them to own four English radio stations in the Montreal market. Count them: 1, 2, 3, and 4. We promise not to mention the other three. If they don't get the exemption, TSN 690's, I like how the Jimmy Riggers do this, I'm going to start again. If they don't get the exemption, TSN 690's world-class sports talk radio will be gone, including its team of great local radio personalities, the likes of Mitch Melnick, Elliot Price, Jay Farrar, and others.
No.
Guess which one I added in. That means goodbye to their top-notch coverage of the Habs, the Impact, the Alouettes, CIS football, live broadcasts from the NFL to the NBA to the MLB playoffs to Premier League soccer to a host of other local events, not to mention the station's lineup of great guests from around the sports world, including Dan Gradinsky in studio right now.
They wrote that too?
I'm taking some creative liberties.
Oh.
If you want to show your support, please share this event. Sign the petition at the link below, which is CanadiansDeserveMore.ca. And then come out on Tuesday, April 2nd for a great night of music. And it's going to be a rocking good time. I'll be there. Jay Farrar, will you be there?
I will absolutely be there.
You're not working that night, right?
I am not working that night. And unfortunately,
Huzzah.
Unfortunately,
pip, pip.
They had asked my brother.
Oh, and is he still in L.A.?
He's not back. But yeah, no Anakin Slade for that show.
Maybe he can. We can do like a Skype video in of Anakin.
Well, maybe
live via satellite.
Yeah,
with those awkward delays that live via satellite brings.
Yes. Yeah, it would have been a nice place for him to. I'll give a little teaser to showcase something that's coming up.
I look forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is,
mm-hmm.
but I look forward to it. And you know what? We haven't played in, we're teasing a new Anakin Slade song. Local artist Anakin Slade, who's a fantastic musician, his Expo songs, they still give me goosebumps.
They do.
I rewatched Remember the Expos this weekend. I showed it to my girlfriend. She hadn't seen it before. And I realized very quickly as I was watching it that it still gets me. It still gives me the goosebumps. It still, he sings Still Missing Montreal 6 years on, and this is the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
So time flies.
It does.
And that's the marker for how long I've known you and your brother Anakin. We met a week after that song came out on the bus to Cooperstown.
After it was released, that's right.
The day we almost died on the road to Cooperstown.
Well, think of it this way. 9 years on, and there's a feasibility study.
That's right.
So, hey, we'll see what happens when it's 12 years on.
I think my issue with it, Jay, is that I know it's feasible. So why are we wasting $500,000 when we know that it's feasible?
It's okay.
It's okay. It's not our money. It's okay.
It's not our money.
It's okay.
It's not our money.
It's okay, Dave. It's not your money.
It'll be paid for. Let them do it. Whoa. Let them do it their way. Let the suits handle it the way that suits handle it. And we'll just sit back and wait and hope for the best.
Docile Jay Farrar.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I could do this, and we're going to switch roles here.
Listen, I hate suits, but if they're going to help me out, then I'll leave it in their hands. Suits make the world turn around.
Let's go back to the suit in the corner here.
Yeah,
Dan Gudinski,
is he?
Our legal analyst, I want to put it some sort of fancy way, but really it's the guy that we would call if we needed somebody to bail us out.
He's our
lawyer.
If we were caught in the desert, too, anytime.
Well, and this is the thing. Dan,
I'm here for you.
That's right. Yeah. We appreciate that. Dan is going to talk a little bit about this death race in Pittsfield, Vermont. Once again, youmaydie.com is the website. And why don't we go through it? We talked at length over in the summer about the torture that they put the participants through. Willing participants. Everybody signs up for this. Everybody pays. Everybody's happy to do this. Talk to us a little bit about the winter death race.
Well, sure. I had tried the winter death race about 2 years ago, and I had promptly crapped out pretty quickly. I really wasn't able to stick with it at that time. Decided I was going to come back and try again. And so the first weekend of February this year, showed up in Pittsfield, Vermont, a lovely town about 10 minutes outside of Killington.
About 3 hours from here.
Yeah, about three hours south. And the first thing they get you doing is, with this race, the idea is that you kind of know when you're going to start. You certainly don't know when you're going to finish. And you really don't know what you're going to do. So the first thing we did was we started by chopping wood, a lot of wood, working around this small farm, basically a working farm still, and we were hacking away at these big, big logs and making firewood for a good portion of this small town as well.
Can we just, let's back up just a second. How does one mentally prepare for going into an event where they don't know what is going to happen? They know that they're going to be gone for a few days. I mean, you work full time, you're a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sleeping for a week in advance of knowing that you're not going to sleep all weekend.
You basically have to go into the race with the mindset of no matter what comes your way, I'm simply going to be able to gut through it. And there's an easy way to do it, at least one that I kind of put into place for myself, which is that I assume that I can get through anything that you throw at me for 5 minutes at a time. And so I take those 5 minute increments, and I say if I can keep going at this little rate, at this rate, then I'll be able to get through it and eventually get to the end.
Interesting. So you've done. You're almost at your third 5 minute segment on the Kaufman Show. Are you feeling okay?
I'm feeling good. I think I can keep going? Get through this one. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So once again, you start, and the first thing is chop a lot of wood.
Chop a lot of wood. Then they bring us back into this this nice barn they have. Bring us into the basement.
How cold are you when you're chopping the wood?
This is actually at the beginning when it started on the Friday night. We are now about -5 degrees Celsius, so it's not too bad.
And how much when they say chop a lot? Do you know how much, or are they just saying chop until we tell you to chop?
Until we tell you to chop, and there is a lot of wood to take care of.
Okay.
So then we move over into a small barn where they have us doing about 1,000 body weight squats. And a whole bunch of burpees, which is a sort of a military-style exercise.
The sort of down to the ground and then back up top with a jumping jack, right?
Exactly. You've seen all sorts of Marines doing this.
I sure haven't done one.
I've got my own version of burpees, but you don't want to hear it.
Those are more heartburn-related.
Yeah, okay, if you may. If you prefer.
Continuing on.
So after we've done about 1,000 of those, which is pretty tiring.
How long does that take?
That took us, all told with the various other sort of standard exercise we were doing, probably about 2.5 hours.
Okay. And you're counting or somebody counts for you?
They're counting for us. If someone amongst the group of 57 competitors is not doing it right, then guess what? We're all doing it over again. So it's pretty tough in that respect.
Does something like that create camaraderie or resentment?
Most of the time, most of the people I was speaking with, it's camaraderie because, obviously people will get a little bit frustrated along the way, but if you're going to get frustrated for every last little thing, then you're not going to last very long, and it's not going to be a very fun experience either.
Okay.
So then they bring us back to the farm, and we have to move these 900-pound bales of hay, I should say.
And I'm sorry to keep cutting you off, but, this is my show, and I have a lot of questions. How tired are you at this point? How much time has elapsed?
Now we're probably around 1 o'clock in the morning.
So and you started at what time?
Friday at 4 p.m. So it's Saturday morning.
Okay, so you're 9 hours in.
Yeah.
Sounds like one of Robin's shifts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
So now we're moving these bales of hay, but we're not allowed to roll them at all. So with these sort of grabbing whatever we can find around the farm, including big, long planks of wood and rope and that kind of thing, we pick them up in groups of probably about 10 people or so and see if you can haul them over about a half mile or so, which is actually pretty far, believe it or not. It certainly feels like it at the time.
Okay.
After that, they split us up into three groups. So there's about maybe 15, 20 people in each group. They tie us by zip ties onto a rope, and they say, guess what? You're going to be hiking up this snowy, icy mountain altogether. We'll see you back here in about 3 hours' time.
Tied together.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. So every time people up front start going a little fast, everyone behind starts getting dragged. It's not so bad on the way up, but on the way down, it's pretty hard.
The middle of the night.
It's the middle of the night. You've got a headlamp on. You don't have your pack, so if you were smart enough to grab food and water with you, you're doing okay. But otherwise, a lot of people didn't, and were suffering for it.
One of the themes from the summer competition, if I remember correctly, was deception. So they would tell you you'd only be gone for a couple of hours, and then you would pack, you know, the according amount of food and water, and then you'd be gone for 9 or 10 or 12 hours.
That's exactly it.
Did this happen again?
They kind of did this time, but you had the sense that you weren't going to be going for quite so long because it's the winter, so you guess that they're not going to be quite as reckless with your body as they might otherwise be in the summer. They still take their liberties with it, which is where we come up with the next task. After we've done a bunch more hiking, they bring us out into the river. Now, the river in the small town in Pittsfield was the site of Hurricane Irene about a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
and the whole town really got hit pretty hard, but particularly this bridge, this big steel bridge, got absolutely wiped out. So in the middle of this river is the wreckage, the remnants, and which included a 2,800-pound steel I-beam buried under rocks and, in a frozen, icy winter river. So we had one big rope. And they told us, guess what? You're all going in until we get this thing out. So we would take turns basically going in for about 5 minutes or so, doing everything you could to dig out the I-beam, and then eventually we'd start hauling and pulling and pulling. Now, the thing is that we started with probably maybe 45 odd competitors at this point. And as people are getting in and out, you can imagine pretty quickly they're saying, you know what? That's about it. I've had about enough of this cold water as I want to take. So people keep dropping. But with that, we're still working and working and working. And I think it's hard to tell the time, but I think it was about 4 hours later where you finally saw that I-beam actually move and yet pulled out of the water. I did not think it was possible.
Wow.
Before that moment, I did not think that humans had built the pyramids. And after I saw that, I said, okay, I get it. I believe it.
We're joined in studio by Glutton for Punishment, Dan Gradinsky. We're going to take a little bit of a break. In the meantime, why don't you all go on to your computers and check out youmaydie.com. Give you a bit of a visual for what you've just heard. And I think I've figured out the scam in all this. They're rebuilding their house, aren't they?
That's exactly it.
This is, I want you to move this up this mountain and move this here and move this there. And that's going to be the nicest damn house in Pittsfield, Vermont.
Stick around. We may need you for a baseball stadium.
We'll be back with Dan Gradinsky in a couple of minutes on The Kaufman Show. Jim Abbott is around the corner. Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show, Holy Week edition. A little Passover, a little Easter. We wish you all the best. What, we don't, Jay? Come on. Wish them the best. Wow, you just don't care. You just don't care anymore.
I wish you all the best.
Happy Greek Independence Day.
Happy Greek Independence
Day. Hellas!
Jeez.
I'm trying, okay?
Yes, you are.
I'm trying.
You're certainly trying.
I hashtagged Hellas tonight.
Yes, I saw that.
In honor of TSN 690 basketball correspondent Pete Yiannopoulos, who seems to hashtag that on everything he does.
Okay.
Yes. Nothing wrong with it.
No.
2004 Euro Cup champions, right?
That is correct.
That's another hashtag I see all the time.
Do you see that? Yeah.
2004 and Simon? Euro Cup champs.
You see Simon do that too?
Simon, not as much.
No.
Not as much. No, he reps Chamonix.
No, St. Dorothy.
St. Dorothy.
Kaufman.
Pardon me.
Kaufman. St. Dorothy.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Dan Gradinsky, Kaufman Show legal analyst who occasionally does some crazy, crazy stuff. And frankly, we have you on more for the crazy stuff than we do for the legal stuff. Perhaps that will change sooner rather than later.
I believe so.
Lord knows there's always things to discuss from a legal angle.
Tired of doing all this crazy stuff, just get on the air, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
Aren't they one and the same, legal stuff and crazy stuff?
Well,
it's kind of the same thing, isn't it?
It's sort of it's the workplace equivalent of crazy.
Right.
I mean, things like, in real life, outside of this radio stuff, Dan has been one of my closest friends for over 20 years now. And I'll call him on his cell phone on the weekend, knowing it's not going to answer because he's sitting in his office. And he'll call back 2 minutes later. The guy's always at work. And when he's not at work, he's training for these crazy
things.
Or
he's in a desert in Mongolia or something.
Right. And yeah. Again, I often talk about the fact that you manage to squeeze more hours into a day than just about anybody I know. Why do you choose to squeeze them with such things that you do?
Well, it's a good question. I wish I had a really good answer for you, Dave. But I guess the simplest thing is that because the challenge is there, because it's something interesting to try and to say I've been able to do it. And more often than not, you end up failing, but you end up learning a lot about yourself along the way.
It's not really about success and failure in something like this, though. You don't want to finish first. It's about beating yourself or beating what your expectations for
That's
yourself,
exactly
right?
That's exactly it. It's about the experience. And at the end of the day, saying, you know, I'd rather tried and failed than having not tried at all.
How do you top, I guess you're, in your opinion, the way to top something like this death race is to go off to China and run in the middle of the Gobi Desert. Is there ever an end game, an end point in this? Is there a point where you'll go, I can't do more than what I've done? Time to work on something else.
Well, I think that'll probably come when my body says, you know what, that's probably the last mountain that you're going
to
climb.
Well, you're in your early 30s. I'd imagine that there are certain things that you have to deal with that you didn't 5 years ago.
So far it's been going pretty well. I mean, the best thing I have to say is that I've been able to sort of at the same time as saying, well, I'm going to push my body really far, but also to, to do the kinds of things that you need to do to keep it in shape with stretching and yoga and at least resting more often than not is just as important.
Look at that. He rests. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah.
Might be a different version of rest than yours, but still.
Probably. So you're going to go and volunteer at this year's death race, right?
That's right. I'll be coming back off the plane from China, so I won't be able to participate in this year's summer death race. I'll have to wait until next September for the following segment.
My goodness. Yeah. I went down last summer to watch him...
I know. You came back in shock.
Yeah, shock.
You weren't the same.
Complete shock.
Just watching it made you tired and exhausted.
Exhausted. And if you'd like, you can tell the anecdote about...
Well, Dave happened to have caught me. I think at this point it would have been 52 hours into the race. And as the boxers say, I was getting a little punchy. I was hallucinating a little bit and seeing some funny things out on the trails. And I happened to have seen, I saw what I expected to be an Oakland Raiders. I knew it was from the Oakland Raider from the early 80s. I'd say a wide receiver lying on the ground. And at a couple minutes later, there
Tim
comes
Brown?
Dave. Well, no, it was a little earlier than Tim Brown. I was looking at the uniform, so I know this part. At least.
Okay.
And then a couple minutes later, up comes Dave Kaufman strolling up the trail. And I said, Dave, hey, how you doing? This is really cool. I just saw this awesome, hallucination and explained this whole thing about the Oakland Raiders. And Dave, being the funny guy that he says, he says, yeah, you're still hallucinating. I'm actually not here at all. To which I responded, you're right. I have no reason to ever see you in the woods. I've never seen you before. It must be a hallucination. So.
And be careful. Don't step on Tim Brown.
No. Yeah. See, I just assumed that
Watch out, Dave. That's what I thought he was going to say to you.
I thought there was a tie-in. Again, there was a very famous raider named Napoleon Kaufman. I just assumed that that's where his mind was going.
That could have been it as well.
Dan, if anybody wants to get involved in the death race...
You can go to youmaydie.com. The death race is part of the Spartan races, which are coming up to Tremblant. I believe it's May 26th this year, 25th and 26th, and they'll be back for a longer version as well sometime in July. But great races and great ways to start and to challenge yourself. Even, you know, I hope to see you out there as well, Dave. Jay,
volunteering.
Robin, yeah.
Quick bit of advice for anybody who wants to take part.
It's simple as this. Just get involved. Get started. All you have to do is get yourself give them a call, and they'll be happy to take you. I mean, it's a really great organization. It's a great community, and you won't meet better sets of people.
The website is youmaydie.com. Dan Gradinsky from the law firm of Borden, Ladner, Gervais, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
We'll see you soon. This is The Kaufman Show. Jay and I are going to go do some burpees, and we'll be right back. And Robin Flynn, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Join us anytime.
Will do.
We'll miss you, Robin.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. You all right there, Jay?
Yeah.
All right. Feeling a little bit more okay now that Dan has left the studio?
Yes.
Feeling better about ourselves?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, he's an incredible athlete. It's an amazing story.
And he dresses well, and he's good looking, and good riddance. Good riddance.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'd like to think of it more from the admiration side than the jealousy side.
Yeah. This room got a whole lot uglier. It did.
When Dan left
Robin
the room.
Left too, and now Jimmy's here.
Jimmy's here.
No offense, Jimmy.
Welcome.
I mean, you know, you're a great guy,
Jimmy.
But, you know.
It was a lot of fun. And once again, if you're interested in testing yourself and the limits of your physical and mental capabilities, check out this website, youmaydie.com. The website is terrifying. Nobody, little caveat, nobody has actually died running the death race.
No.
They pull you long before you get to that point. But
yes.
The idea is to challenge yourself in ways that you never dreamed possible.
I'm going to do it.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I'm going to go do it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to get in shape.
You're not doing it in June, that's for sure.
No, I'm not doing it in June. I'll do it next year.
Okay.
I'll be 37. I'll go try it.
I'd like to, Jay, I will be there to support you every step of the way.
Yeah, should I try it?
What? I would start off at a lower level. I would try one of the Spartan races that Dan was talking about.
There's levels?
Yeah, this is the highest level of it. But you can do things like 10-kilometer or 10-mile races. You could build yourself up towards it.
Okay.
But if you did it, you'd be with, you know, Navy SEALs and...
I was an athlete once upon a time.
I believe it, but you would have to completely change the way that you live your life in order to do it and
yes,
do it effectively.
I can do that.
I believe you.
Thanks for your hope, Dave.
I'm trying to be as earnest as possible.
Okay.
I genuinely think you could do it. I think that anybody can do it that puts their mind to it.
Well,
and
that
I think
doesn't
that,
make me feel better.
Well,
anybody can do it.
It should. And I think that our next guest is a great example of of how one can triumph and overcome obstacles. And I am so excited right now. I feel like a kid again. Our next guest is, his name is Jim Abbott. He was a Major League Baseball player. He was one of the best pitchers when I was a kid. And I kind of feel like one now. This is very exciting. Jay was saying at 11 o'clock that as kids, we all used to try and pitch like Jim Abbott. And I imagine a lot of people have told him that along
the
way.
Try the glove switch and,
like,
yeah.
Everybody I know. I mean, baseball camp in the summer, if you weren't trying to pitch like Jim Abbott, you weren't doing it right. And let's welcome him to the program. Welcome to the show, Jim. How are you?
Thanks, Dave. I would correct you and say, if you were doing it like me, you were doing it wrong. Well, you're just making it a little bit harder than it had to be.
Well, yeah, but I think there was a certain excitement and challenge to that, and seeing that you could do it and that you mastered it. I mean, there was never a question about you were never a defensive liability, and that was always the assumption, I would imagine.
Well, thank you. You know, I worked really hard at my fielding, and I knew that was probably going to be something as I moved up the levels that people were going to try to exploit, that they might see the fact that I played with one hand and had to switch the glove on and off as a weakness. So I worked really hard at those comebackers. I worked really hard at the bunts. And I really honestly felt like by the time I got to the major leagues that I was a proficient major league pitching, you know, as a fielder, I held my own. The pitching sometimes was a question. The fielding was okay.
Well, I mean, but you made a jump that not many people have done since, to go straight from college to the majors. I mean, you were a bona fide star before you even pitched in the big leagues with the 88 Olympics. That was the first time that baseball was in the Olympics, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, baseball was in the Olympics in 84, and we were actually the second time that it was there. We were over in Seoul, Korea. And, you know, my career, a lot of it was being in the right place at the right time. And I don't mean that false modestly. You know, I went to the University of Michigan, and we had a really good baseball program back then. So I was able to play collegiate baseball at a very high level against a lot of great players, and then the timing worked out that so that I could play on the Pan Am team after my sophomore year for the United States, and we played all around the country and played internationally, played for Cuba, we played up in Canada a ton, and you know, so there was always a lot of attention, and my story got out a lot, so I really was sort of in the right place at the right time, and the next year was the Olympics, and then I was in the major leagues right after that. So I think all of that pitching for Michigan and then pitching for the United States, that gave me kind of the training and the background to be able to make that kind of leap.
Was it difficult to be a spokesman for disabled people at such a young age?
Well, I didn't really want to be honest with you. I wanted my play to be whatever message there was to those out there who might see inspiration in my play. I didn't try to go out there to be a role model. I didn't try to go out there to be say, hey, you can do this. I was trying to make the most of what I was given. And my dad told me a lot when I was a kid that, you know, what's taken away once is given back twice. And that was sort of the mantra that I lived by. I believed that a lot was given to me. I believed that I had an obligation to make the most of it. And as I grew older and I saw the way that people were affected by my play, I still believe that. I still believe that the only way to reach people was to be good. It wasn't enough just to make it. I wanted to be good at what I did.
Let's look back 20 years again, then to next September, where you pitched a no-hitter in Yankee Stadium against the Cleveland Indians. And I think that, I mean, I imagine you had gotten that validation long before that, but that must have been the day where you went, yeah, I'm good.
Well, for one day, it was incredibly exciting. I was wake up in the morning. My wife and I, we lived in Manhattan at the time. Went to the ballpark. You know, it was every start brings its own nervousness and anxiousness and excitement. But yet this was another start in September at the end of a season that had been going on for a while, and so. The game starts, you don't really know what to expect, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the later innings of a game, you know, with those great Yankee fans booing the umpire with every ball and cheering for every strike, and every out is a countdown towards the end, and, you know, to get those last three outs in that ninth inning, you know, were in, it's just, it was an exhilaration that I can't even really describe. And to get the last out of that ninth inning, that 27th out, without them having a hit yet, you know, and to do it in New York, to do it for the Yankees, it was something that just really takes your breath away.
Had you ever pitched a no-hitter in your career before, like at a lower level?
I'd pitched a few in high school and in Little League and all that, but I'd never pitched one in a sort of organized format, either whether college or professionally to that point. I'd came close, to be honest with you, though. Earlier in that year, I had had a no-hitter in the eighth inning against the White Sox, and Bo Jackson fisted one off of his bat and hit it up the middle, and it was a good pitch that he just kind of fought off and got a hit out of. So I knew the fickleness of a no-hitter. I knew that really the result was out of my control, and that experience against the White Sox earlier in the year really helped me to stay focused on what I could control and not worry about what I couldn't as those outs added up and against the Indians.
We're in conversation with former Major League pitcher Jim Abbott on the Kauffman Show. Jim, do you have any memories of you played in Montreal, I believe, a couple of times in your last season, right?
I did. I played in Montreal briefly. It was just a quick trip in, but they, you know, I remember them having Vladimir Guerrero and an awfully good team, and you know, it was a beautiful city, but the ballpark wasn't the best.
No, it still isn't.
The energy was low, and I felt bad for what was going on there, because there was all this talk of leaving and yet to see all these great players, and you know, I really enjoyed going there. I wish I could have gone there more.
Speaking of your last season, Jim, I mean, we were talking about your fielding before. You had to hit, because you were playing for the Brewers now and you're in the National League, you didn't have the benefit of a designated hitter. You did manage to get two hits that year, and it says here that Mariano Rivera claims to have seen you hit a home run in batting practice.
Really?
Is this true?
Yeah, you know, it was true. I took great pride in my hitting when I was in high school, and then I found out that they could throw curveballs, and that became a whole different story. But I had a great time playing for the Brewers, and I loved swinging the bat, and I found out how hard it is. I mean, you just have so little time to react to a Major League fastball, and then when they start mixing in some of those other pitches, I remember facing Greg Maddux, pitching against him one night, and he was sort of my hero, and you know, the guy from my generation who I thought was probably the best pitcher that we saw, and he threw me a fastball right down the middle, and the first pitch, and I said, man, I took it, and I didn't swing, and I shook my head, said, I could hit that pitch. And the next pitch he threw was a sinker that looked exactly like that same fastball, and it sunk just about 4 or 5 inches, and I swung the bat as hard as I could, and I missed it by about 4 or 5 inches. And then, two pitches later, he threw me a changeup that sunk down and away, and I missed that by 2 feet. And that's when I realized just how hard it is to hit a Major League Baseball.
I have visions right now of Pedro Martinez in his rookie season, well, in his second season in Montreal after he was traded from the Dodgers, and he would just be so comical at the plate.
Oh, he was terrible. He was terrible.
But it all comes down to practice. I mean, there's no reason that a pitcher can't hit. It's just that they're not given the opportunity. It's not given the same weight. Which is something I've never understood. And obviously, I mean, like you were saying, Jim, you took a lot of pride on your hitting when you were younger. At the same time, I'm assuming you were pitching, right?
I did. You know, pitching is sort of a strange position. You get some guys who are incredible pitchers, and yet they could barely run over to first base to cover the bag, you know, on a play at first base. So I do understand why some of the pitchers struggle hitting the ball. It is a really difficult thing to do. It's not something you have exactly right. It's practice, and along with great hand-eye coordination and great eyesight. Really, what it blew me away when I played for the Brewers, they used to have these drills where they'd shoot these tennis balls in spring training, and so everybody had to do it—the pitchers and the position players, of course—and they'd shoot these tennis balls at you, and they'd start at about 85 miles an hour. And you'd swing the bat and try to hit it, and then they started adding red numerals on the tennis balls or blue numerals on them or green, and they'd start asking you, you know, what color was that on the ball when you went by? And I couldn't see it. And then they'd start going 90 miles an hour and then 95. They'd actually get it up to around 100 miles an hour. It was really a visual test. And some of the better hitters on that team, guys like Mark Loretta and Jeremy Burnitz, and they could see the numeral. They could see the color, and sometimes they could actually even tell you what the numbers were. And that blew me away. I mean, I couldn't believe their eyesight that it takes to be a great hitter in the major leagues.
I feel like Ted Williams might have invented that that little practice game, no?
Right, maybe. He talked a lot about that, didn't he?
He did. I picture the chart in Cooperstown with all the balls, and it would show his average as to where the ball in the strike zone, where he wanted his pitch, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his, quote-unquote, sweet spot. We've got a couple of minutes left with Jim Abbott, and I'd love to ask you, Jim, how has the game changed since you played?
Well, I think it's become a little bit more specialized, as everybody knows. I mean, the pitchers aren't expected to go as long anymore deep into a game. The bullpen has become much more prominent. Everybody has a specific role. You have guys who come in sixth and seventh inning, and they know that's when they're going to be called on. And I think the velocity that the pitchers throw now is harder. I think guys have picked up a lot of velocity. It used to be the guys in the bullpen when I was playing were guys who, maybe washed out of the starting pitching and rotation and were relievers. And now it's guys who've been training to do this since they were kids. They're just all out. One or two pitches that, really dominating pitches. So I think that in that way, the game has probably changed a lot more than it was when I played.
Do you miss it?
I do. I miss it sometimes. Not a lot. I'm really lucky. I had a great career. There were some ups and downs there, but I really was fortunate in the places that I saw and the people that I played for. And I was able to walk away where I didn't miss it in a terrible fashion, but there are times, especially this time of year, spring training, right at the end of spring training, when you start the season on a fresh note and you're really excited. And I still have those dreams at night where I'm back in a major league uniform and in a clubhouse, and those are really happy dreams. I find myself a little disappointed when I wake up.
Now you're a motivational speaker, right?
I do some speaking. Yeah, I've been lucky, as I said, to have that avenue to go down after my playing career has been over. And, it's given me a chance to focus on something else and a chance to continue on with some of the off-field things that I did when I was playing, and a chance to, try to encourage people to believe in what is possible in this world. And that's really been a fulfilling second chapter to my life.
You also wrote a book last year.
I did. I wrote a book last year, which was great. A great writer who I had a lot of fun with, Tim Brown, who writes for Yahoo and covers Major League Baseball. He knows the game inside and out, and he was the perfect collaborator, and really proud of it. It came out last year, and the paperback comes out real soon this year. So another great chapter, so to speak. It was. I really enjoyed seeing the book world and being associated and meeting really smart, cool people and traveling around promoting it. And that was another neat thing to be involved with.
It's called Imperfect, An Improbable Life. And honestly, I haven't read it yet, but I can't wait to pick it up. And I'll definitely grab a copy and let you know on Twitter what I think of it.
You can follow
Jim on Twitter at jabbottum31. Go blue, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
All right. Once a Wolverine, always a Wolverine. Jim, thanks so much for your time tonight. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on, and I wish you the best of luck. Thanks.
You too. Thanks so much.
Bye.
There he goes. Former Major Leaguer Jim Abbott on the Kauffman Show.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It's cool sometimes to talk to guys that I grew up watching,
It's exactly how I felt.
We're playing in the major leagues when I was coming up during high school and playing junior, and I was playing as well. And like I said, we used to do the mitt switch, try and do it in practice. Some guys, I mean, it's hard enough. You always get the guys who try to throw left-handed or use their other hand to try and throw.
Submarine it.
Yeah. Try and switch your glove around.
Yeah, good.
Right after you release an 85-mile-an-hour pitch.
And I'll tell you, there was a player on the Montreal Expos at the end in 2004 who would not have been in the major leagues if it wasn't for Jim Abbott. His name was Chad Bentz from Alaska. And Chad had the same disformity of his hand that Jim mm-hmm. had. And Chad pitched for the Expos. He pitched for the Marlins, I think, in 2004.
That's right.
And, yeah, Jim Abbott is a role model and a hero to many.
Mm-hmm.
And really cool to see what an upstanding individual he is. A great interview, and it was a pleasure to speak with him.
Yes, it was.
So we're going to take a little break. John Kakalakis is going to bring you a sports update. And then when we come back, we're going to speak with Nancy Hogshead Makar. We're going to talk about women in sports and women's rights and a little bit about Steubenville, because it's important to keep talking about the important things.
Absolutely.
This is The Kaufman Show.
Want to tell you about the girl I know. She looks so fine. She's the only one that I've been dreaming of. Maybe someday she will be all mine. I wanna tell her that I love her so. I'm through with her every touch. I need to tell her she's the only one I really love.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, right here on TSN Radio 690. That was really fun, AJ.
It was.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep it rolling right now.
More fun.
This is a Kaufman Show first. We're going to speak to back-to-back gold medalists on the Kaufman Show right now. It's kind of impressive.
How many other gold medalists have we had on the program?
We've had a couple. We spoke with one 2 weeks ago, Rulon Gardner, the wrestler.
Yes.
Who else? Goodness. Mark Tewksbury, correct, the Canadian swimmer.
Daniel Sauvageau.
There you look at that. A lot of gold on the Kaufman
Olympians
show,
are
right?
So available. I like that.
Well, there's something a lot more grounded about
yes, they are.
An amateur athlete than a professional athlete. Yes,
and
Jimmy.
And a snowboarder a couple of weeks ago.
Ross Rebliati. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we'll keep those gold medals coming. No guest until now has won 3 gold medals.
No.
She won them all at the 84 Olympics. Her name is Nancy Hogshead Makar. I hope I pronounced that right. And my goodness, she has appeared on shows a little bigger than this one. She's been on 60 Minutes. She's been on CNN. She's been on NPR. She's been on MSNBC. Sports Illustrated listed her as one of the most influential people in the history of Title IX. And we welcome Nancy to the show. Hello.
Thank you, Dave.
How are you?
A nice intro.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're on vacation, so it's very cool of you to join us late at night and while you're on holiday.
Sure, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm a night owl anyway, and I heard about your show and was looking forward to being on.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, I want to talk about a range of issues with you. We don't have a ton of time, but we'd love to get into, again, you know, you are the person to speak to about equal play and Title IX. And right now in Canada, there's a bit of a story. This weekend was our women's hockey championships. There's a 5-team semi-professional league in Canada and the United States right now called the CWHL, I believe. And they're not breaking through to the mainstream. And oftentimes you'll see in the media here conversations about they get a lot more play about why they're not big than that they're the best female hockey players in the world. And this is something that women's sports has been dealing with, well, since Title IX, when women were given a chance for equality, at least in university sports.
Right.
What can be done? How do you convince the general public that women's sports, no matter what sport it is worth your time?
Well, a couple things. One is I think the brilliance of Title IX as a federal law, a U.S. law that says that you have to give boys and girls equal educational opportunities. Sports is part of education in the United States. It's not in most other places around the world. But the brilliance of it was past 1972, and we didn't wait before people said, hey, I think, you know, I want to watch women's sports as much as I want to watch men's sports. We didn't wait for, hey, you know what, we really don't think girls are interested in sports. It just said you had to give girls equal educational opportunities, and they rushed to fill them. Now, that has been what has changed society. It hasn't been, we didn't wait for people to change and then offer sports opportunities. First, we offered these sports opportunities, right? And then, you know, everything from, you know, just, you know, women in education, women in employment, women, the stereotypes about women not being strong and physically capable, I mean, all those changed as a result of seeing so many women play sports. And I think that it's only inevitable that women's sports, sort of the women's fan base is being allowed to grow. I think people forget how long it took for men's sports franchises, for the big ones, the NFL, the NBA, the baseball, how long it took for them to be the huge profit-making money makers that they are.
True.
And how long it was that they lost money before they started turning dime one.
So would you say then that it's moving in the right direction, just perhaps a little slower than people would like?
Well, I would say that, you know, so I'm more familiar. I'm not so much on the marketing side. I'm more on the legal side. So I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that there are no legal impediments to having girls be able to play sports. That the civil rights law, somebody else who might be interested in voting, or somebody else that's interested in race, somebody else in disability, would sort of be working in their realm. But here's what I know about. Say Title IX and women in sports, is that it wasn't going to happen without people out there working for it every single day. And it wasn't just this inevitable, natural, historical flow. That my job is making sure that whatever the impediment is, whether it is a legal one or calling out, even say if there's an organization that's not allowing girls to play, there may not be a legal basis, but still challenging them to say, hey, this is the right thing to do. This is the fair thing to do. And I remember, I don't mind my telling this whole story.
No, please, go ahead.
Okay, all right, so I was in the middle of telling you that 20 years ago, the conventional wisdom was like, you know, sort of eye-rolling, like girls are going to have the same sports opportunities that boys are going to have. And then I was there for the 30-year anniversary, and I testified in Congress actually 20 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. So, right, so I've kind of been able to see this evolution. 10 years ago, at the 30-year anniversary of Title IX, the conventional wisdom was that Title IX was under assault. You had wrestlers, and you had, you know, different groups saying, it's not fair to boys to give girls equal opportunities. And we were really in this, we had President Bush, who had told a lot of groups that he was going to do what he could to try to weaken the law. And the upshot was he lost in every possible way. They lost in, they filed lawsuits, they lost there. They had a PR campaign, they lost there. They had a they had this commission, a presidential commission on opportunities in athletics. They lost there. I mean, in every way they lost. And so since then, there's been this, you know, much more of a momentum. At the 40-year anniversary this past summer, the wisdom was like, oh, my gosh, Title IX has done so much for us as a country, for all of us. And I can't tell you the difference between 20 years ago and 40 years ago. And I really, when you look just at what playing sports has done for our economy, for having a workforce-ready economy, it has been incredible. We have all this great research showing what a sports experience means for a girl. And one of the main things is she is going to be in the workforce full-time, much more likely, much less likely to get pregnant, much less likely to to get osteoporosis and breast cancer and all kinds of things. And so she's going to be like, this is sort of good for everybody, is if we have both girls participating in sports. But my thing is, look, if we have all this great research showing how great this is, most athletic departments could easily double in size. Why don't we? Why don't we double in size, the size of athletic departments? If they're all about athletics, if they're all about education and making better kids and making a better, more productive society, let's do it.
Right, but we both know they're not.
Well, I mean, as a public policy matter, if there's a great researcher, her name is Betsy Stevenson, she's out of University of Michigan, and she did this phenomenal research showing that it wasn't just that kids of parents that play sports are, that they were going to do well anyway. It's not just that they have these parents who are going to take them to and from practice. It is that there's something about playing sports that actually made the kids get an extra year of education. Now, come on. If right now we've got about half of all kids playing sports. In my kids' school, it's about a 200% sports participation rate. So private schools, you'll have double, triple the amount of sports offered that what public schools will offer. If we have all these anti-dropout programs, we have all these anti-don't-get-pregnant programs, why not offer twice as many, both boys and girls, more sports opportunities? We could have skateboarding. We could have, there's tons of different sports that wouldn't be cost prohibitive, nowhere near as expensive as football. Football's wildly expensive.
We've got a few minutes left with Nancy Hogshead Makar. And Nancy, I want to talk to you about Steubenville a bit. Does an event like Steubenville and showing the predominance of rape culture, especially around, small towns and high school football, does that make the average girl want to get away from sports, not get involved because they see certain things about society that they may not want to, that they think maybe they're inviting in?
Does it make them not want to get involved in sports?
Yeah. Like,
and I never heard that one. I do think that it makes people not want to become fans of men's sports when they see that the risk of sexual assault and rape for all women is greatly enhanced by men in all male groups. So whether it's the military, it's all male sports teams, or the clergy, or the right, you'll see much more, or fraternities, much more sexual harassment and sexual assault against women broadly. Men who are on co-ed teams like swimming, mm-hmm. like track and field, like, right, so the men and women train together, just the opposite. Much, much less risk of sexual assault.
Interesting.
So what is the culture going on in these all-male groups that is harmful to all women? And we need to recognize what that is and do our darndest to try to change that as a public policy matter. When you think of what the risk for all women is, right, that's part of what in colleges and high schools, Title IX requires schools to kind of figure out what are the risks and do something about them. They can't just afterwards say, oh, you got raped, I'm sorry, here's some great counseling. Right, they have to predict, prevent, and as soon as somebody does get raped, they've got to address the harm that came from the rape.
Which we don't see at the high school level. I wonder what's happening in Steubenville right now to make this girl feel okay and accepted.
Yeah, there's a great Facebook page called We Support Jane Doe that's all about, and people leave the most beautiful messages to her. There are lots and lots of people, or, you know, hundreds of thousands of people now. I think it's up to like around 400,000 people have signed a letter to CNN saying, how dare you, you know, feel sorry for the rapist and not for the rape victim. I think that the more that you can name rape culture, the more that you can call it out, the more, there was no word for sexual harassment before the 1970s. It was just, you know, the way that it was. And
wow.
To be able to call out rape culture. I mean, I think that's what Steubenville, the big gift that it has given all of us, is the vocabulary to be able to do something about it.
Nancy, will you share what you, or paraphrase what you wrote on her page?
Sure. I wrote, I wish I had it right here. But what I wrote was that I was so, so sorry that this had happened to her, and that when I was 19 years old, that I had been raped. And I wanted to tell her two things. The first was, she's not going to always feel as bad as she does now. She, I had PTSD pretty badly for probably, 4 to 6 months, but I probably didn't go away for about a year. And her, she will feel joy and love and euphoria, and again, and she will feel good again. And the second thing is that the second thing I wanted to tell her was that, you know, there are lots of amazing women out there who have been brutally raped. And when people talk about their rape experience, you're kind of seeing them in their broken state rather than in the, you know, post-rape experience. I mean, sort of, you know, when somebody sort of incorporated it into who they are as a person, they've sort of fully encapsulated this experience. And for me, I don't want to be somebody who wasn't raped. And that doesn't mean that I would go back and choose that again, but that the gifts that it gave me, ultimately, that it gave me, I treasure, I really value, I really... you know, I feel much closer to God. I have much more compassion for my fellow person. I think if I hadn't been raped, that I would say the path that I was on, I was only 19 years old, but the path I was on was very much I was interested in being the best swimmer in the world and getting good grades, and that was it. And I really had almost nothing else on my plate. I had no worldview. I had no sense that I was connected to other women, that I was even connected to humanity. I had sort of going through the struggle and the pain of trying to, I just couldn't imagine that somebody as strong as I was and as goal-oriented as I was could get raped. Was I blinking? I just couldn't believe it. Anyway, so what I wanted to tell her was that that it's not all bad. That there is a she can look forward to a phenomenal, amazing life where she contributes to the world and she has a great life. That as bad as she feels right now, it won't be like this forever.
Nancy Hogshead-Makar is the Senior Director of Advocacy for the Women's Sports Foundation, and I wish we had more time. Will you join us again down the road?
Sure, Dave. Thank you so much for having me on.
I really appreciate you, especially during your vacation. I know how precious that time is, and I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Have a great night.
Okay, you too. Good night.
Nancy Hogshead-Makar, one of the greatest Olympic athletes in American history. In fact, in 2000, Sports Illustrated listed her as one of the most influential people. No, sorry. Another Sports Illustrated. One of the 13th greatest athlete from Florida in the 20th
Ever.
Century.
Yeah.
13th greatest athlete from the state of Florida, ladies and gentlemen. Think about the great names that have come out of the state of Florida. We just spoke
13th.
With one of them.
Not bad.
And again, I wish we had more time. I feel like that could have gone on for an hour. And we'll hopefully have Nancy back on the show and... just fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to try and get Torben Rolfsen, Van Guy, on the phone and end the show on a lighter note.
What happened to the time?
She flies. She flies. What happens when you're having fun? It's the Kaufman Show. We'll be back. With you.
Just you and me. Now won't you tell me the truth? Ain't that the way it ought to be? To hold each other tight the whole night through. Everything is always right when I'm alone with you. To be alone with you at the close of the day. Well, only you that just refuse. The only one I know is when I'm alone with you. They say the nighttime is the right time to be with the one you love. Too many thoughts get in the way in the day, but you're always what I'm thinking of. I wish the night was here, bringing me all of your charms.
Thank you, Bob. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. I believe our next guest is up and ready to go. We've been looking forward to his debut on the show for quite a while. And since the baseball season is starting, we figured we would start it out. Out. Where did I start it out. Our next guest is, you can catch him on Team 1040 in Vancouver doing the Rolfson Report. He also writes for The Province. He is a comedian based out in the 604. And it's a pleasure to have Torben Rolfson on the Kaufman Show. Let's say hello to the van guy. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm good. Dave, Jay, how you doing?
How you doing, Torben?
Doing great.
Good.
Yeah. Things in Montreal.
Cold, full of potholes, corruption. At least we have good food.
Good, though. It's going to make for a fun spring.
Absolutely. It always does. Everything's good out west?
Very good, yes.
It's weird talking to the past right now. It's only 8:52 there, Jay.
Yeah.
We're time traveling.
Yeah. Kaufman still finds that amazing.
Every time, eh?
He just finds it amazing that, you know, thousands of kilometers away, it's a different time. He can't make the connection. Just can't make the calculation.
My dad's in Nova Scotia. Canucks game started at 11 o'clock at night for him.
Oh, wow. I hope he's a night owl.
Yes.
And if so, he's listening to the Kaufman Show right now.
Yeah, he's up for that.
So we got a few things we want to talk about with you this week. Obviously, you're excited for baseball to start.
Yeah, the big news, I guess, today, Vernon Wells to the Yankees. I mean, in the Bronx, this is known as a youth movement. I mean, Yankee Stadium is like Field of Dreams. It's where all these old star ballplayers from the past appear.
That's not bad. And it's funny, though, because he really is a youth movement. I mean, at 30, I think he's 32 years old, which on that
34.
Team is 34. That's very young for that team.
Yeah. And did you see that Milwaukee Brewers GM Doug Melvin was stung by a scorpion inside his Scottsdale hotel room?
What?
I mean, many of us have been stung in hotel rooms, but it's usually by the bill for the minibar.
Oh, man.
It's not like Arizona, you know, they don't sugarcoat these dangers. It's called the Cactus League. And come on down. Our plants have painful spines. You know, we've got scorpions and rattlesnakes. You'll probably get slivers from the dugout bench.
That's why I've always been more of a grapefruit guy myself.
Scottsdale could combine spring training with an S&M convention. Arizona in March, where the safe word is safe. I was watching a lot of the WBC, too, gang violence at the Canada-Mexico game.
Yeah,
that
wasn't
Mexican
that something?
Pitcher. Yeah, I mean, the Mexican pitcher repeatedly went after the Canadian batter like he was a piñata, which was ironic considering for much of the game the Mexicans played it like they were swinging a stick while blindfolded.
Yeah, that'd be even funnier if we'd beaten Italy.
Yeah, I saw the Netherlands beat Cuba 6-2. It was the most poorly received Cuban performance since Buena Vista Social Club played the Warped Tour.
Where is our drum beats?
Honestly, Jimmy, where are our drum fills?
And was there an unreported SARS outbreak in Japan? I mean, I noticed people wearing those surgical masks in the stands. I don't know about you guys, but I can't imagine attending a baseball game and self-imposing barriers between hot dogs, beer, and my mouth.
Well, you never went to the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I got to say, as far as the SARS outbreak stuff, I saw that in the press box. Somebody had tweeted a photo of basically being like, the guy next to me is wearing a mask. Does he know something that I don't know?
Right. It's the beginning of a bad, you know, one of those, like, outbreak. Just the beginning of a movie, you know, that you see where you can foresee what's going to happen.
The hot zone, the Fukuyama Dome.
Oh, no.
So you guys following March Madness?
Of course.
Yeah. Apparently, I mean, it's been pretty crazy. Apparently, my brackets, road to the Final Four, went through the hedge maze in The Shining. You know, who's a big bracket head is Barack Obama. He's like, spends a lot of time. He's a big tourney junkie. But who would have thought Florida Gulf Coast would have done more damage to his weekend than North Korea and the Mideast combined?
Nice.
And Cal beat UNLV in San Jose in the East Regional. I mean, is it any wonder they say today's American students have a poor grasp of geography?
Brilliant. They played the East Division in San Jose?
That's right.
Wow. Wow, they play the West one on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Pacific, or what?
Yeah, there you go, exactly. Michigan State would do that if they could.
Amazing.
Harvard had its first postseason win ever. You might have noticed that.
Yeah, yeah,
the
with
greatest achievement. Greatest achievement by their students since they invented Facebook.
That got a ton of play here, Torben, actually, because the star of the team was a Quebecois.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he hit five three-pointers in the the game. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, everybody was asking for that game at the pub, but I was like, who cares about Harvard? You know, like, really, yeah. they don't get enough attention already? Now they're winning basketball games? Harvard is winning things that usually happen in the hood. Think about
That's exactly right.
Wow.
And now we're on to the Sweet 16. That's NCAA South Regional. It's in Cowboys Stadium. You know, Jerry Jones is busy drawing up plays to share with the teams during their timeouts this weekend. And finally, it was sad to see Canada's team Gonzaga eliminated, but maybe for the best, since Kelly Olynyk had to get back to the Game of Thrones set.
To the Game of Thrones set. Ah. I guess that is starting next week, right? Very well put.
Just right into good segue into Game of Thrones starting next week.
Torben Rolfsson, thank you so much tonight. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week.
Hopefully we'll catch you soon. Follow him on Twitter at VanGuy.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Torben.
Thank you.
There he goes.
Sounds like he's great on... Well, I do follow him, but, you know, he seems to put his jokes into 140 characters or less, so that's great.
That was...
It's perfect. He's made for Twitter, this guy.
We have our new Henny Youngman on the show.
We do.
I was
like
take my wife, please.
It really was.
I take my wife everywhere, but she always finds her way home.
Yeah, it was like a Rodney Dangerfield type thing.
Next week, Jimmy, drum fills. Ba-doom-ching after each one of those. They need it. They need give it that
those
extra.
Ones, yeah, well, it's old-fashioned comedy.
Extra,
I love that.
Exactly.
I love that. It's old-fashioned comedy. Kind of like Red Fox, Rodney Dangerfield. You know, one-liners, bring it out there.
Don Rickles.
Well, Don Rickles, yeah.
Well, it's more of an insult comic,
I guess. He didn't have much to work with. I mean, if he was sitting in studio with here, believe me, he would have had plenty of material.
Let's open up the phone lines for a couple of minutes before we call it a night.
Okay.
514-790-1690, 1-866-896-2546 if you're outside of the Montreal area. What's going on? You want to say hi? You want to call in and tell us about your Passover? You want to tell us where you hid the Afikoman from Jay?
The what?
And by the way, we haven't even mentioned it this week. What's wrong with us? Join the Facebook page, Jay will paint your living room.
What?
Every week, we offer something new that Jay does. Oh. You go to like the Kaufman Show on Facebook, Jay Farrar will come. Not,
there's more of a chance of me going to the death race,
not
believe
you
me.
Entering a draw for Jay to paint your house. I mean, every single one. If we get 50 likes, Jay's going to go paint 50 living rooms this year.
What?
This week. It's going to be great.
Okay. Good luck with that. On my way.
Just let you know that next week we've got a very special Kaufman Show lined up. Easter Monday. Will you be here?
Easter Monday?
Easter Monday.
Yeah.
Can you make it?
Yeah, I can make it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. You say it like I was trying to be nice.
You're saying it like as if I...
Like what?
What am I, hunting for eggs and stuff? Like, I don't know.
I'd imagine more like roasting a lamb, but...
Yeah, I don't know if it falls on the same day this year. No, eh, Jimmy? No, I don't think so. So
Greek Easter,
Greek, yeah, Orthodox Easter, and yeah, Catholic Easter are different.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah,
how foolish of me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in that case, to some people,
you'll be here Monday.
I'll be here Monday,
and so will Mike Spry.
Oh, is he coming back?
Yeah, you're going to get to meet Mike Spry.
Okay,
this is exciting.
Okay,
you're nervous.
No, I'm not nervous at all.
Don't be nervous, Jay. Oh, come on. You look great. Don't worry. I wouldn't introduce you to Mike if I didn't think you looked perfect.
I'm not. Why would I want to look good for him? He doesn't even have an appendage.
We're going back to that, huh?
Yeah, I saw Mr. John Fiorentino after that at
the
bar.
Yeah, did you talk to him?
Yeah, and he kind of hid in the corner snickering.
I bet he did.
He knew what he had done.
He gave us like 3-4 minutes of showtime.
He did. He really did.
Dave McGimsey will join us as well. And there's a possibility that we may have the professor in as well, Avi Goldberg. It could be a full cranial episode of the Kaufman Show next week.
We had John and Dave and I.
Yep.
Over a few
pops.
Yep.
Had
a very heated argument.
Do tell.
Not an argument, a heated debate.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little deep, so I don't really want to get into it right now, but it was it got to the point where, you know, I had to go outside and have a smoke.
No.
With Dave, yeah.
Are you serious?
No, it was good though. And you know, when I have a few pops, I have a tendency to mouth off even more than when I don't. So you can only imagine when I'm like, well, you've seen me with a few pops in me. And
I have been witness, yes.
Yeah.
I have bore witness.
And in a bar, it's much more fun to shock and awe people because I get a direct reaction. On the radio, you don't really get a reaction, so it doesn't really fuel a fire.
You can see my face.
I can see your face, which...
which usually turns a different color. The eyes pop out.
And you look a different color, looking straight at me, and wondering when to tell Jimmy to hit the dump button.
That button has been used very rarely in the history of the show. Yeah.
We were arguing about child molesters. But anyway, that's a story for another time.
See, and Jay, the eyes just popped out and mine just turned red. So,
yeah.
Like, why are we talking about this?
It wasn't a pro and con argument
either.
Well,
I would hope
not.
I would hope not.
It was more of a philosophical argument.
Like, the guy that's pro that doesn't get to stay in the bar while you go out for a smoke. Let's put it that way.
Guess who came off the bad guy in this argument?
Not you.
No, never me.
Can't be. A Fiorentino. The guy who doesn't have a voice to defend himself on the show, right? You blame it on him.
No. He was more popular in the argument than me with the people sitting around us.
Okay. It
was fun. I barely remember it, but it was fun.
Well, you can be a little bit contrarian at times, Jay.
Yeah, not for the sake of being contrarian. I just have a tendency not to believe what everybody else believes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With a few minutes left that we have in the show here, I would like to hear about your weekend, Jay.
Well, I had the opportunity to, for the first time and probably the last time after that, visit the Montreal Canadiens locker room right after the alumni game, the celebrity game, the celebrity alumni old timers. They don't call it old timers anymore.
I think they called it the All-Star Challenge.
Something like that. Yeah, and got to go into the
old-timers game.
Yeah. Got to go into the room there and say hi to Sergio and went in with Bartlett, took some pictures. I posted them on Facebook if you want to see them on Jay Farrar on Facebook. Please feel free to become my friend.
Everybody. What did you get paid for yesterday?
For yesterday?
Yeah. Well, you were down there covering it, right?
Oh, the payment was fun, Dave. Fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I went down, took some pictures, met Chris Chelios, met Eric Lindros.
Did you wish Chris Chelios a happy Greek Independence Day?
No, I
What's
forgot.
Wrong with you?
I don't think he really cares.
Wow.
But for all you ladies
Man,
out
if
there.
Man, if I saw Jeff Halpern yesterday, I so would have been wishing him a happy Passover.
Yeah. That's true. You probably would. And he's the only NHLer you could probably say that. No, there's a couple.
There's
more.
A couple. Every once in a while, I used to see somebody yell to Brian Schneider at the end of in September. Hey, Brian, Happy New Year. Have a safe fast. Yeah. And he'd look up and be like, what the hell are you talking about?
You know what the best thing about my visit yesterday? Well, not the best thing is I almost had a heart attack. I was nervous enough as it is. You don't really want to touch anything. It's kind of like a sacred room.
My first time in there, I was in journalism school at Concordia.
Yeah.
And it was right when Guillaume Latendresse started playing with the team. So it was like the training camp, I guess that was 2006, I think. And I remember the first time I was very nervous around in that dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
A very nervous feeling trying to ask a question of Bob Gainey in that dressing room.
Yeah. Well, I was surrounded by Hall of Famers, right. Anything I felt. Anyway, they had a bit of a buffet right in the middle of the floor over the symbol, but they cover the symbol with a carpet.
Okay.
In order so that no one treads upon the Canadiens logo in the middle of the room.
Well, we all saw that Dr. Mulder almost got his medical license taken away for stepping on the floor. Right?
Exactly. Now, I walk in, and Sergio throws me a pop.
Yes.
And I open it, and we're having a couple of pops in the room. I'm talking with the guys. You know, Steve Schutz over there. Guy Lafleur is over there. I'm name-dropping. I'm like, wow, I'm in heaven. And Knuckles comes by, and... knocks the bottle out of my hand with his stick.
Really?
And the bottle falls out, not on purpose.
Obviously.
Yeah. The bottle flies out of my hand and pouring beer all over the carpet.
No. Yes. Jay.
And Bartlett is standing there going, it's all right.
Is that right? It'll absorb it right in there. There he goes. All right, pick it up quick. JJ, pick it up.
John Bartlett, always the play-by-play man.
Always, yeah. And the bottle goes flying right out of Ferrar's hand and hits it roll right off the side of the bench. And now it is pouring beer all over the carpet. Anyway, that was devastating for me. Nuck was like, sorry, didn't care, and then walked on. And I was like, Nuck, you're killing me here.
That, back in the day, long before I was a radio host affiliated with a station that's
home to the Habs.
Yes.
Used to go to a lot of games, both at the Forum and then when I was a little bit older at the Molson Center and then the Bell Center. But there was a certain age that I'd reached where I felt comfortable sneaking in a pop or two
right
into the Bell Center. And, my seats were way up in the sky. I mean, they still are, but I'd sit way up in the sky. And, a friend of mine and I would bring in a couple of pops. And one time we were really silly. I mean, you can buy Coca-Cola and Sprite and all of those things in tins or in plastic bottles.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, we decided to bring our pops in glass bottles.
Right.
Smuggled them in our coats, got up to the seats, no problem. Line up the pop bottles right in front of us, sitting there and you'd sneak a sip of the pop when the security guy wasn't looking.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I kicked one.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lull in the play. It was one of those, one of those Florida Montreal 0-0 third period games where everybody's asleep.
Bink, and a bink, bink, bink.
16 rows, Jay. I was in the last row and it went dink, 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 all the way to the bottom where it went crash. Luckily,
wow.
The break and the fall were so far removed from where I was sitting.
Right.
That the guilty party got to enjoy the game.
It had a hell of a trip. Yeah.
Lesson learned.
Yeah,
kids, don't bring in a pop. If you want to have a pop at the game, buy it
there. Well, they had them there
buy
in the
it
dressing
there.
Room.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's a big thrill. It was nice to walk around, and I get to see the shower facility. So any of you ladies were jealous about me having a picture with Chris Chelios, well, I got to see him before his clothes were on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, Jay, you are blowing
man's
a line.
In shape.
These are things we're not supposed to discuss.
The man's in shape.
Doesn't matter. What happens in the locker room stays in the locker room.
Well, he was taking a shower. What do you want? I'm sure everybody's glad to know that Chris Chelios takes showers.
Yes. Do you want to get into even more in-depth on the play-by-play here?
Well, it was an alumni game.
By the way, Jay, is the moment when you were supposed to wish him a happy Greek Independence Day.
Happy Greek Independence Day.
Yeah.
By the way, here's
your towel.
It was an alumni game, so I wasn't exactly surrounded by some of the best bodies I've ever seen in my life.
Speaking of, two words, if I may, and I'd like your comment on them.
Yes.
Fat Lindros.
He's not that fat. That was just a bad angle.
It was a bad picture?
It was a bad picture.
Okay.
You know who took that picture, right?
It was Amanda Stein.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. It was just a bad angle picture. I mean, he's not skinny, but he's seen better days. But, I mean, some of the other guys in there, I mean, yeesh.
It really kind of looked like Eric and Brett Lindros were both in that same jersey together.
Richard 78, by the way, is a star. This guy's 59 years old.
Okay.
And he was flopping all over the ice like he was 30 years old. Incredible saves.
How was Marcel Dion was there too, right?
Yes, he was. Not moving as good, but you know what's great about watching these games? You see flashes of the talent that they once have.
Of course.
Watching Ray Bourque, you remember how the way he was so smooth when he skated.
Sure.
Taking the puck in from his own zone and bringing it right up. Nothing has changed. It was just a pleasure just to watch that. And they were wearing their original jerseys,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
Which was great,
For
so
sure.
Just seeing these little flashes of the talent that they used to have. I mean, you got Chris Chelios and Ray Bourque on your blue line. It makes you think a little bit more of a fantasy type thing.
Of course.
You know?
And then to throw in the mix someone like Kovalev, who only retired last week.
Right.
Yeah, he must have looked amazing on the ice with all these guys.
I think he was trying too hard not to embarrass anybody.
Oh, okay.
Although Matthew Darche didn't care. He was flying around guys. There's some guys that looked really good. Gary Lehman looked great. He could skate.
What? I saw a picture on Twitter, Gary Lehman in his Leafs jersey.
Yeah.
This is the 20th anniversary of the Montreal Canadiens winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Gary Lehman was a Montreal Canadian on that team that won the Cup. We traded Brian Skrudlin for him.
That's right.
That was a big name. I don't care that he scored 50 goals with the Leafs.
Yeah, I know.
He's a 93 half.
They needed guys. There were other guys from the Canadiens that were playing on that team as well.
Mm.
Yeah. And then they traded Chris Chelios during the second intermission.
I saw that for
Mark
Bergevin.
Bergevin, yeah.
Yeah, well.
And he wore a Canadiens outfit for the first time.
They didn't want to trade him for Denis Savard?
No. I was saying, I posted it on Twitter, that is the worst trade we've ever done since the last time we traded Chris Chelios.
Let's go to the phones. 514-790-1690. If you're out of town, it's 1-866-896-2546. 2546. That's 2546.
2546.
2546. This is the Kaufman Show. This is TSN Radio 690. Hashtag save TSN 690. Let's go to Expo in Redondo Beach, California. Hello, Steve.
How are you guys doing?
We're great. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Have you bought your tickets for July 20 yet?
Yes, I have, and I can announce to all of you to not get your, don't book your hotel yet, and don't book your transportation yet. Matthew Ross and I are working on something very special.
Good to hear. My mother has also purchased a couple of tickets. Her and another 76-year-old are going to be going on a road trip.
That is awesome.
To support the cause.
Wow, that makes me so happy. That's really great. I know that we're at almost 100 people that have actually purchased the tickets off the Blue Jays website, and it's bluejays.com/exposnation. And come join me. I'm in section 139B, I believe, row 6. Come join me.
We're not sitting together.
You want to sit with me, Jay?
No.
Are you going to be able to come?
I'll figure it out.
So then, yeah, I've got a ticket for you if you want it.
I'll figure it out.
Okay.
Jay will be there for sure. I have an Expo story for you guys.
Sure.
I went to my supermarket, and there's this guy there that's always friendly. He works there. He's a big guy, and I wore my Expo hat the other day, and he says, "Oh, a buddy of mine. I grew up with a buddy of mine who played for the Montreal Expos." So I was like saying to myself, "Okay, like who? You know, what obscure person could this be?" And he says, "Well, actually, he really wasn't a buddy of mine. He was more a buddy of my mother's. We were kind of arch rivals." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, I grew up in Fullerton.
Oh,
Gary Carter
wow.
delivered newspapers to our house, and he was always talking to my mother. But he was the quarterback on the other team, and I was the big star on the football team. Turns out this guy was in the NFL. He played a little bit, not much. So he was the star player on the other team. But he said that Gary was a great guy." Although they were, you know, enemies, so to speak, on the field.
I think the term is rivals more than anything else, right?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Look, Gary Carter was never fun to play against anyway.
So the random Expo turned out to be the greatest Expo in Expo's history.
Exactly. So you never know.
Pretty cool. Are you going to make the trip up, Steve, or just your mom?
I'm going to try and go. We'll see. We'll see if it works out.
No, that would be really special if you could make it. We're expecting a lot more people than last time. I think it's going to be a real time, man. I cannot wait. July 20th, Sky Dome, Expos Nation rallies. And, it doesn't matter. If we fill the Sky Dome with 50,000 Expos fans, it doesn't bring the team back any closer. But it gives us a day.
Sends a message.
And it's what a great day last year.
There's your feasibility study right there.
That's right.
Sends a message.
Occupy left field this year. That's the goal. Get a couple thousand people out there.
And we'll do the Bronx cheer for Tim Foley again.
Well, maybe there'll be other surprise appearances by more prominent Expos.
You know what? All we need is Anakin Slade or Jonah Carey and somebody to bring a Yuppie doll.
And Jim Fanning.
And Jim Fanning will be there. Gentleman Jim Fanning will be there.
That sounds great. I hope to see you guys there.
Thanks, Expo. Have a great one.
You too. Bye.
Enjoy the start of the baseball season, which starts next Sunday night. Houston versus Texas.
Yeah, Houston's in the American League now.
Isn't that
Forgot
wild?
About that.
Yeah, and they're not going to win very many ball games either.
Brought back the old unis, too.
Yeah, which is great. I love those old uniforms.
It would be great if it came from an era in which they were good. But they were never good.
That's so, not true.
When were they good? In the 90s, a couple of times?
Yeah, they had some moments in the 90s. In early, mid-2000s, they made the playoffs.
That's right.
When Carlos Beltran had that incredible playoff run for them.
Yes.
Which I think was...
And then didn't swing. No.
No, and that was with St. Louis. That was with St. Louis. I have memories of Albert Pujols hitting a home run so deep off, I can't remember.
Brad Lidge.
Thank you, John Kakalakis. And you know when that was? That was the night of Matthew Ross's wedding. And I snuck down to the bar to watch it.
That's nice. That's nice.
Well, hey, man, you're going to get married during the playoffs?
I'll tell him that.
Playoffs?
Playoffs?
Yes, Jimmy.
And, of course, the Astros, they lost a heartbreaker to the Phillies in 1980. Playoffs and a heartbreak
to the Mets
in 1986.
Yep.
That's right. They lost a huge game to the Mets. Didn't they have a 3-2 lead?
Innings, exactly.
And they had a 3-2 lead in the series against the Mets to win the pennant, didn't they?
I think, was tied at 2. The Mets won Game 5. Gary Carter got the game-winning hit off Charlie Kerfeld.
That's right.
Extra innings. Camera Carter. I remember the headline. In Game 6, of course, 16 innings.
Go ahead, Jay.
Nobody ever remembers the losers, including me. God.
Well, we remember the Expos, so we do remember some of the losers.
Right? Well, those ones we remember. We don't want to remember them, but we do.
What an interesting show tonight. We really ran all over the place.
We did.
I guess it's because we started early. It doesn't feel like we've already done 2+ hours, but here we are. We're done, and we got to reload for next week already.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
I look forward to it as well, Dave Kaufman.
This is it's your new favorite radio show, and we'll keep trying to make it. We'll make it stay that way. I want to thank our guests from tonight. I want to thank Dan Gradinsky from Borden Ladner Gervais. Once again, check out The Death Race. If you have any desire to see just how far you can push yourself, youmaydie.com. It's
next year.
Like a joke.
Next year.
Next year in Jerusalem?
I'm going.
Okay. Next year in Pittsfield.
Pittsfield.
Thank you to Jim Abbott, former major league pitcher Jim Abbott.
Hero.
Always an inspiration. Always an inspiration. He wrote on Twitter a few minutes ago, Jay. He wrote, thanks to the Kaufman Show for having me on tonight. It's all awfully nice to be remembered so long after my career and so far away from home.
A sweet guy, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet guy.
A class act as we, and it's great. Again, you know, you admire somebody, you grow up and you look at somebody as a hero, and 20 years later it's validated, which is right. Pretty cool. Our thanks to Nancy Hogshead Makar, who we'll definitely have back on the show. Fascinating stuff, and so nice of her to open up so candidly.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Van Guy on Twitter, Torben Rolfson from the Rolfson Report.
Take my wife, please.
Take my wife, please. I take her everywhere.
He was good.
She always finds her way home. We'll hold a grudge.
I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. Will you hold a grudge? Davey and me, face down in our soup, some French restaurant, I saw Rivière du Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next Monday night.
I don't know. That sound like